I don't think the advice there is find $100 billion company and destroy it so you can learn how to learn. But it does come across that way a little bit.
Yeah, probably not.
I'd love to welcome Kip to the Unsolicited Feedback Podcast. I'm back here with my co-host for the week, Joff Redfern, who has been with us for a couple of episodes here. And we're excited to have a conversation with you today, Kip.
Thanks for having me, Fareed and Joff. Nice to hang out with you guys. It's a little break from doing marketing. Talk about marketing. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Awesome. I hear you're just back from South by Southwest a couple of weeks ago, and AI was a hot topic there. And you referred in some of our pre-conversations to it. There being some spicy takes about AI going around the back channels at South by. I'd love to hear what you're...
Yeah, I'll give you the background. So I'm CMO of HubSpot. I co-host this podcast, Marketing Against the Grain, with Kieran, who's the CMO over at Zapier. And we talk a lot about AI. We get some like really positive YouTube comments. Then I'm doing this session with Cameron, who's the chief product officer over at Canva. And they're like early adopters, and it was all about AI and creativity. And so I'm like a capital O optimist in life and in AI. And I get to South by, and I'm just met with the brick freaking wall of anti-AI sentiment. And I would say most strongly from the creative sectors.
Okay.
Right? What's interesting about South by, it's this intersection of tech, music, film, AV, like all these things, and the... music folks were like, whoa. You were saying this AI stuff's going to be awesome. We do not agree. We think there are a lot of real risks, a lot of real challenges. We think it's going to make it even harder for us to make money off of the work that we do. And so Peter Deng, who runs ChatGPT for OpenAI, was there. And he was giving a talk and answering questions and everything. He got booed multiple times.
Wow.
Loud boos. I sat through a crazy session just about AI regulation and just some of the far edge takes on what needs to happen to regulate AI. And I was like, wow, people are clearly all over the map on this topic right now.
I think the optimist case is pretty well documented. We don't have to get into that too much. I'm curious, from your perspective, what felt like reasonable, founded fears, concerns, criticisms? And what on your mind feels like FUD, fear, uncertainty, doubt?
I think what was reasonable, it was that like, hey, you all are hyping up this thing that's pretty cool, but it's not like ready for prime time yet. And I think that's reasonable, right? For a lot of these like high creative use cases, we are not there. If you look at Sora, right, from OpenAI, it's taking an hour to render a 1 minute video, and they're using an insane amount of GPUs to do that. So there's still pretty limited resources in a lot of this stuff. And so I think that is right. I think that is fair. I think copywriting and licensing and like how you're monetizing this stuff and what goes into a model, I think that's actually very fair too. And even some of the regulatory stuff, like how do you stop OpenAI and Meta and Google from getting all the regulatory capture around AI? And like, how do you actually have a true open marketplace for AI? I think those things are all pretty fair. I heard also a ton of just, I don't know if you guys saw, did you know Tyler Perry? Do you know who Tyler Perry is?
I know who Tyler Perry is.
So he was planning to build an $800 million facility outside of Atlanta to make his movies. And he got a demo of some of the AI creative tools, and he said nope, and he just completely scrapped the $800 million project. And he's like, no, this business is going to change too much. I do not want to sink that much capital into something that I think might be obsolete. And I think things like that are causing a lot of fear and a lot of feedback from fear, and that was part of what I heard.
I think the licensing question is a pretty founded fear. I think the whole point of copyright is to regulate the ownership of creative works and to understand what fair use is and to help create some like common standards around those things, copyrights, trademarks, etc. I don't quite fall on the all regulation is bad, we should do nothing and let like technology figure out its way side of things. I do think that if I have invested meaningful time and energy in building and creating a creative work, then I should have some rights and ownership to it. If I make the character of Mr. Incredible, it's odd that other people can just, without any cost or payment, because they're using AI tools, be able to generate things that look like that. Now, there are exceptions, et cetera. I am not a copyright lawyer, but I do think that it has opened some really big questions about what fair use is and how it works. And I hope that really smart lawyers and lawmakers take a thoughtful approach to solving that.
I agree.
I think the same goes, I've had a lot of question marks about the trade-off of content publication on the internet, because the trade with Google was always, if you're the New York Times, you put your stuff indexable so that you can get traffic. But in a world where LLMs are ingesting all this stuff, there is no trade, right? What is the trade? The trade is a derivative piece of work that in no way references or links back to me, and I just straight lose. So why would I put things outside of walled gardens if my content can just be like ingested? Yeah. Now, Reddit is signing deals to solve that problem, but I don't think that's the scalable solution. As a systems person, I wish there was something like that implicit incentive alignment that Google has there. So I think that's a really meaningful one. And if I'm a writer, I'm scared of it.
I think there's two things, right? There's the incentive side of it, and then there's the mechanism of ease to do it. Like, even with copyright, it's still all one-off licensing deals for the most part, right? It's not like there's an amazing marketplace out there where you're like, cool, all right, Disney, I'm paying you a dollar a t-shirt and I'm going to make my Mickey Mouse t-shirt. Like, that doesn't happen. And so maybe the AI use case will actually facilitate a true final marketplace of licensing, which would be amazing.
Yep. And I think a lot of crypto people see that as an opportunity of there. Course, who
of
knows?
Course, they do. And I do. I love crypto, but
yeah,
it's going to be hard to scale and get mass adoption of that.
So that's the one side that resonates with me as a concern. The side that like AI generated stuff is going to destroy jobs, that all looks like a lot of the arguments that people had against. I worked in computer graphics early in my career. It was my first job out of college was at Pixar. And I worked later in the stage, more like Finding Nemo and beyond, golden age of Pixar, they call it. But like a lot of what I heard from people about what it was like in 1995, 94, 93 was computer graphics is going to destroy animation. It's going to kill all these jobs. It's like taking the artistry out of it. It is not real or it's like not real animation. And honestly, what we saw instead was whole new sets of jobs. Lots and lots of new work. The level of creativity exploded, and actually the market grew substantively. And the reason it grew is because you could do more with less, right? And now the result wasn't that people did less with it. They didn't make the same thing. They made something twice as good. I just watched Lord of the Rings, which at the time was like most amazing visual effects film of all time, and it looks dated. Yeah. In today's model. So what we do when rendering times go down, when tools get better, isn't make the same thing for less money and fire everybody. It's make crazier shit. And I think that will be true.
Humans have an endless capacity to consume.
And for quality and for excitement and entertainment. And I just don't see this being suddenly the thing that makes that happen.
I agree with that.
We got to go to LinkedIn Games.
This is you and Kip. Go for
it. All right. I'm gonna just talk about this one for a second. I'll set it up. So TechCrunch has an article, but that's actually based on the work of a person who's very good at finding code inside of public products called, I think his name is Nima Auji. And he broke a tweet on March 16th that was that LinkedIn is working on in-app games. There are going to be a few different games and the companies will be ranked in the games based on the scores of their employees. And this looks to be a variety of different mini game type things. Some clues, some puzzle games, etc. The best I can describe it from the screenshots I've seen, they look a lot like the New York Times set of daily games. And then TechCrunch reported it. And I'm actually curious. Let me just ask your raw opinions on this announcement. So LinkedIn confirmed it when TechCrunch asked them about it. They said, these screenshots aren't exactly up to date, but this is a real thing we're working on. We're not ready to announce when it's going to be launched. So this is not a rumor. This is a confirmed rumor. So I'm curious your reactions to this. Kip, I know you have some...
I just don't think it's necessary.
Yeah,
It's not that it's bad. Normally when something is really good, you can draw the line back and be like, oh, this company is obsessed with getting this right, and this is a part of getting this macro thing right. And I can't draw the line back super clear. There is arguments you could make. It's around experimenting with gamification for credentialing and learning and other things that could be potentially very interesting to LinkedIn longer term. But if it's really just puzzle type games and you're just trying to test like the efficacy of gaming within the platform, it seems askew from like the core mission of what they're trying to accomplish. No hate on them. The games might be good. It's not something that like I need from that platform. And I think we're moving to a world with AI where you have to be truly great, because anything on the edges, like AI is just going to be able to commoditize and replicate. And so if you're not going to be really great at gaming, I don't know that you should do gaming at all. And that's not just for LinkedIn. That's for anybody. And I think that's probably my core push.
But Joff, I'm curious your thoughts as a former product leader at LinkedIn.
I think Kip summed it up really well. I'm not sure I would have much to add because I haven't caught up with the team over there, any of my buddies, to ask what's going on. So I have no inside information. I guess I'm now deeply curious.
Yeah.
What is that line? What's the trajectory? What's it bring back to LinkedIn? Why LinkedIn? Why is that important? I'm trying to think about what that might be. It's as you described it, I was thinking to myself, so we have spelling bees and math competitions for companies and we're going to show rank orders and that's going to be important. I'm not so sure. I do think that there's maybe some element, and now I'm just stretching my imagination. It's maybe there's some element of education where it's like, hey, these are coding challenges, those kinds of games. And somehow it's related to skills assessment. One of the things that we talked a bunch about when I was at LinkedIn is we said, hey, look, the resume has been around for 800 years, but if you really want to understand what someone's skills are, having people tell you what they said they did is not quite as effective as if I'm hiring an engineer per se. I could go over to GitHub and I could look at what they've contributed into the code repo. And I'd be like, oh, that's actually really helpful. I can read your code. I can see how many people have forked it, how many followers you have, how many stars you have. And I could be able to evaluate that skill. So on one angle, in the benefit of doubt side, I'm like, maybe it's like somehow related to skills assessment. But yeah. I honestly don't know. I'd probably just default to what Kip said and then just wait and then see what happens.
Look, I think you're right. Like, if this is a very smart thing, then what it is, this is like 10% of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so this little part of it got leaked. It's part of a bigger thing. And it's a whole ladder up on skills. And these early games are just engagement tools to get people started that skill verification ladder. And then they're working with companies on the kind of performance and verifiable data and everything to actually do true skill verification, which would be amazing. That's the holy grail that nobody has pulled off. If you were just going to assess it as what we know at this very moment, you would say it feels very askew.
Totally fair. I'm going to give you guys one more where it could be like float into the genius bucket would be So I saw this, there was a cyber company that came through, cybersecurity company, and they had created a game. And what they noticed is that a lot of the security flaws that we see, loopholes, are when people social engineer someone else. So they created a game, which is you're trying to social engineer your way into a company, and there's 8 or 9 levels. And they're literally like tens of thousands of people who go to try to get through the different level, because you're essentially talking to Sally or Bob, and you're asking that person questions in order to get information from them. And then if you pop it out, you go up a level. So what's going on behind the scenes is that is actually helping them build this corpus of how social engineering attacks happen against a company. Or another really good example would be something like reCAPTCHA, where I go and I'm like, hey, I have to answer, or I have to type in the letters in order to show that I'm a human being. At some point, they partnered with Google, and or maybe Google bought them, and Google was using that to translate books. So they were taking old books where the text wasn't particularly like visible, and they're saying, what is this text? And then they would send it out to users and they would help do translation. So it's, one could also imagine that like that security company or reCAPTCHA, that the information that's being input into this system is actually in purpose of serving, like it's a game, but it's in purpose of serving some higher order good. And that would be, again, the far-fetched version where you'd be like, that's super cool. The LinkedIn people are geniuses.
Yeah.
But we don't know.
Yeah. So I love that because I hate when everybody has just the, like, this is bad take where, you know.
Look, it's either really bad or really brilliant. We just don't know yet.
So I have some, like, I'll give a cynical take. One of the things I'm impressed with LinkedIn is that they have continued to be able to do a really good job of driving engagement on the platform, even over the course of over a decade. And they have done this with a repeated set of reinventions with the feed, with more long form content, with the collaborative articles, AI stuff that they've created recently. They're very good at building engagement growth loops. This feels a little like someone's really good idea to drive daily engagement. Let me, how do I grow DAUs? Yeah. And it's Wordle is popular and the people who play Wordle play it at work. So let's put Wordle on the work platform on LinkedIn and have it there. My concern about this is you don't make leaderboards people don't want to be on. Those are bad leaderboards. So the joke is you never want a leaderboard of who sent the most messages in the cats channel or the food channel in Slack. Like that's a terrible leaderboard because nobody wants to win that leaderboard. It looks like you are not doing your job, right? Nobody wants the leaderboard of which company plays the most games at work. It's like taking an idea from another place and putting it here. And all of a sudden the whole tone of it changes. Like Salesforce does not want to be number one on the leaderboard of mini games played on LinkedIn. They explicitly don't want to. They want to be at the top of the Glassdoor leaderboard, right? Of best place to work. I know HubSpot cares about their Glassdoor reviews and that kind of thing is always ranked as a high place to work. That's a good leaderboard. But there are some leaderboards that actually drive down engagement. And that's the first thing that came to mind with this person who's built games.
That was a good take. I approve that take. Sad leaderboards.
Yeah. And just like the engagement thing feels, I hope that it's one of these genius things. I bet the most likely thing here is that all of this is just internal testing to build some kind of like engagement platform that they want to put actually work-related interesting games on. I hope you're right, Joff, because this in its current form just feels like just moving a little bit further down the clickbait route or the engagement bait route for LinkedIn, which I think is bad.
With that said, rampant speculation is super fun.
Yeah.
Look, when it's not about your company, it's great.
Exactly. Man, thank God this isn't HubSpot or chat.
So they're doing games. And I think what's interesting about LinkedIn, like I said, is that it's been like, it honestly keeps growing and keeps being more important in my life, which is surprising for a social network. While Facebook's importance has gone like this, LinkedIn's importance has gone like this. And I think some of the changes at Twitter, et cetera, have accelerated that. And you see a lot more people posting. It's pretty important to this podcast, right? As a channel, personal brand, to Reforge, et cetera, to a bunch of things that we're doing. I know you probably feel the same way, Kip, with your podcast and HubSpot and other things like that. Companies, when they, especially these mega growers, hit the edges of their TAM, like everybody already uses Facebook, right? I suspect that's true for the US professional market. Okay, if it's not gaming, like what are the right rocks or bets for LinkedIn to be going towards that aren't just driving higher engagement and revenue from the existing customer base? Or maybe not just higher engagement from the customer base, but to unlock new things. What would you do with this asset?
I think Jeff told us earlier, I think it's skill verification, and it would have been getting the Lynda deal right and getting skill verification. Like education plus skill verification is the big opportunity there.
And I spent 7 years of my life thinking about that question.
Yeah.
For me, I always would come back to what is the vision of LinkedIn? And the vision statement is to bring economic opportunity to every member of the global workforce. Hmm. So you'd have to start with that. And I would say that LinkedIn has surpassed, I think, 1 billion users, but the global work population is still, it's in excess of 3 billion. And let's take China out of it because it's really inaccessible. Like it's not, the government's made it hard for anyone to get into that country, even though LinkedIn, I think, has done an admirable job. So then you're like, okay, I'm like, I still have this huge TAM of people that are unserved. And those people, by and large, are middle skill workers and physical workers. So I would be thinking about What can I do for them? One of the observations that I've made in my own network as I've seen it grown over time is that more and more the middle skill worker, so people who are not necessarily a knowledge worker, they might be working in retail or the trades, people like they're starting to come in because they're serving serving their customers are knowledge workers. And they're like, oh, my customer's on there. I need to reach them. And they're coming in. So I would say that middle skill, certainly I'd be going after that really hard and thinking about what are our programs, what are ways in which I can engage them. On the physical skill workers, I think that's probably a different product. So that would be my thesis.
Yeah.
Like at some point you can't like, and I've always admired like HubSpot's discipline in this, like they picked the market that they wanted to enter into and to serve. And so many people are like, no, you can expand your TAM and you can go this way and that way. And they were so disciplined. So I think LinkedIn would comfortably probably hit the middle skill market. And then I would probably create something for physical workers. But given that's the vision statement, I would keep on grinding on it until you really were doing that for everybody in the world.
I think that's right.
But again, I don't think about that stuff anymore because I didn't.
No, you had the benefit of thinking about it for a long time and now having a fresh perspective, and you just gave us like the ultimate take on it.
Yeah.
And we should just be happy with that.
I would agree with you on that piece. There are a bunch of different companies like looking at the LinkedIn for the non-knowledge worker space. Many of them are hiring platforms or otherwise SaaS for SMB type businesses that have to hire people. Workstream, I think another one's called JobGet. There's a company a friend of mine is the CEO of called Seasoned. They all have marketplaces for, let's say, restaurant work or other types of work. They tend to do some SaaS stuff or hiring platforms, et cetera. And all would, I think, would love to be in a position where they were the resume for the non-professional worker, a lot like LinkedIn is the resume for the professional worker or replaces the resume for it. It's a hard thing to do. And it would be interesting to see how LinkedIn pushes into that space and how they do it without diluting the product for the people they're really good at right now. And I think it's a really interesting perspective on it. Again, LinkedIn Learning, I think, is $1 billion+ business, Kip. So it works pretty well, but on the scale of LinkedIn, it's still tiny.
Yeah, it worked as a relative term, right? It's could have been maybe 10 billion. Like it could have been, it just depends on that. LinkedIn, to their credit, has always been good at focusing on that core business and executed very well against that.
And Joff, I love that you started with the mission statement. This is a man that worked for Jeff Weiner for a long time. Knows that you always start at the top with the clear message.
I love mission to values, baby. If any of our listeners have not read Jeff Weiner's vision to values, you must go out there. Basically all my product work is in some ways premised or attached off of that. And I agree. You got to start with the vision. Man, the number of times that Jeff just pounded in my head, what is a strategy in particular? Strategy is how you navigate a competitive landscape. I can say that in my sleep, no problem. But yeah, that is a great framework. And it's to the credit. One of the things that I think really benefited LinkedIn is that in the early days, LinkedIn got a bunch of people that were from Yahoo. So Jeff obviously came from Yahoo as an EVP over there. Ryan Roslansky is the CEO. He came from Yahoo. I came from Yahoo. A whole bunch of us worked underneath Jeff over at Yahoo. And the reason why it was a blessing is we failed hard. We basically, when we were at Yahoo, we saw Yahoo go from a market cap of, let's say, 104 million to maybe 4 billion to maybe 4 billion when it was acquired by Verizon. So you literally destroyed $100 billion in shareholder value and you're culpable. You're like, I was a vice president. He's an EVP. It's, you can't say as the people at the top were fucked up and they didn't really understand the strategy and stuff. You have to take ownership.
That was me.
Yeah, exactly. So when you go to the next spot, you're like, we're not going to do that again. And you recognize that a lot of the flaw that happened was that we were not crisp on what is the strategy? What was the next wave we were trying to ride? We rode the internet and the portal wave brilliantly. And then we didn't have Act 2 or Act 3 or Act 4. And while we had ideas, we tried to buy Google. We tried to buy Facebook. We knew that those waves were coming. We didn't really consummate or attack them in a way that was necessary. So when Jeff came over to LinkedIn, he was, I think vision of values is really stems from Like that vision value stuff from Jeff probably cost $100 million in shareholder value to create it because it was so important. And to Jeff's credit, like I remember him at Yahoo trying to use these frameworks to push to say, we have to be clear around, are we a technology company or a media company? And yeah, so if you haven't seen Vision to Values, it's this very simplified way to get your company clear, super clear on one page. What is your purpose? Why are you doing this? How are we strategically going to attack it? How will we measure success? And what are our stack rank priorities? And what are the top 10? And draw a line and go.
Yeah. So for anybody who says you learn more from success than failure, or you can't learn from failure, LinkedIn is an awesome example of the opposite. I think that's great. All right. So LinkedIn games, we don't know. Maybe they've lost their way. Maybe not. But it'll be certainly fun to see what happens with it. I'm glad we came across this one. This is like the perfect unsolicited feedback conversation.
Back to Jim's point, as long as it's not about my company.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, if you guys want to talk about this for another hour, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing I worry about is I don't think the advice there is find a $100 billion company and destroy it so you can learn how to learn. But it does come across that way a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably not.